Hello and welcome to Minbar. I'm your host, Ahmed Hanif. Last week, we talked about the issues surrounding Muslim integration into Western societies. Today, we want to continue this course, but take a special focus on the issues of ethnicity and Muslim women in this particular discussion. And to join us in this discussion, we have with us Dr. Akbar Muhammad Ali, Assistant Secretary General of the Muslim Council of Britain. Welcome. And Ms. Shalina Zahra Jan Muhammad, a blogger on a very popular website called Spirit 21, spirit21.co.uk, who discusses on her blog issues concerning Muslims in the UK. Welcome both of you all to Minbar. And Ms. Jan Muhammad, the first question I'd like to ask you is, to what extent is Western society inclusive of Muslim women, practicing Muslim women, and to what extent is it not?
Like all human societies, Western societies have good things about them, but also things which need improvement that are challenges, particularly to people who want to practice Islam. And when it comes to being a Muslim woman, some of the positive things that have come out of the minorities that live in Europe and the Americas is a challenge to Muslim women to explore their faith, to give them the opportunity to learn and try to understand what it means to actually be a Muslim from the values of within. And that means there are some really good things that happen. So, for example, I wear my hijab in the United Kingdom, as do a growing number of women. They're becoming more educated and getting their jobs and trying to distinguish between the challenges of culture and faith. But this means there are also challenges, because seeing Muslim women adopting a new way to approach the world is challenging for the Western model, because they're not used to women who can be proud in themselves, have their own confidence, and be willing to challenge the status quo of women as it is. And that's an area where sometimes women do face discrimination because of what they wear, because of the values that they try to portray. But that's something that Muslim men also face. And so it's something that we need to work on, that we're trying to communicate to the wider society that we live in.
But is it equal? I mean, the challenges that Muslim, practicing Muslim women face, and Muslim men, is it equal? I get the impression that it's much more difficult for a Muslim woman in the West to deal with these issues than Muslim men. For example, I mean, the general feeling about Islam is that it's, for example, is a misogynistic religion, right? When they see a Muslim woman with hijab, they see a Muslim woman as oppressed.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. They insist upon you being oppressed, even though you claim that, yes, I put this hijab on of my own free will.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you feel that, you guys have a little extra struggle to put up with?
Well, there's the obvious. We look obviously different. Muslim men can sometimes hide away a little bit and not make it so obvious that they are practicing Muslims, whereas a woman who wears hijab, wears jilbab, wears niqab, in whatever way, it's just completely obvious. And you're absolutely right to say that some of the very stereotypical views, the perhaps uninformed Western views, are that you poor woman, you must be terribly, terribly oppressed. And you're so oppressed, in fact, that we're going to tell you what you think, which is extremely frustrating, particularly for women who have proactively chosen to be practicing and to wear the veil in whatever format they have chosen to do it. But there is something that's a little bit more complex underneath that, which is that a lot of the Muslims in Europe, in the UK, come from very traditional cultures. And in some of those cultures, they also have forms of misogyny. And they, in an environment where perhaps people feel that Islam is under threat, will try to also exert a certain degree of control over Muslim women, and to try and make them dress in a particular way, think in a particular way, and sadly, judge them in a particular way. So a woman who wears hijab is immediately cast as somebody who must be very pious and zealous, and one who doesn't, despite the fact she may be trying to learn about Islam and go down her spiritual journey, is immediately cast as somebody who is impious and has rejected Islam. And so Muslim women find themselves stuck in this quite complicated battleground between those who want to create the stereotype of Muslim women as oppressed and those who, you know, as I say, sadly and unfortunately from within the Muslim community also want to claim that Muslim women are free by confining their activities.
Now, Shalina made a very interesting point here about the role of ethnic attitudes towards Muslim, and I would assume in general towards Islam, that helps to sort of contribute to the difficulties that Muslim women face in these alien societies. What aspects of Islamic, or are there any aspects of Islamic culture or the culture, ethnic cultures between Muslims, what aspects of these cultures would be problematic in creating an acceptance of Muslim women in Western society?
You've made a very important point, and what I would like to separate is the difference between what some of our, what is Islamic within Muslims and what is our culture and our ethnicity that we practice, which we feel or convey sometimes as Islamic. So if you take the issue of hijab, you have a range of hijab, different types of hijab in different cultures of the Muslim community, and they are accepted as those within those cultures as hijab. Similarly, there are other aspects about us as Muslims that from different parts of the world, from different ethnicities, from different races, that we sometimes confuse that we are having our own cultural practices, which are not necessarily Islamic practices, but we convey and we ourselves believe that these are Islamic. And that sometimes raises conflict. So to give you an example, in Britain, one of the ways that the Muslims try and make their identity portrayed is by the dresses. So, you know, they wear a jalaba to make them make a point that they are Muslims.
And a jalaba, for those of us who are not familiar with Islamic culture, is one of that very long shirt-like gown thing that men wear, down to the ankles.
Exactly.
Right.
And we make judgments. Mm-hmm. And similarly, we expect that non-Muslims must be making judgments. Because sometimes when Muslims see another Muslim wearing a tie and a suit, they'll say, you know, he's not a very strict
he's a sellout.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Similarly with hijab, if I can say on the issue which Shalina raised, is that Muslim, and you asked her what are the challenges that they face, sometimes Muslim women, they might be at heart and spiritually practicing Islam, but they may not convey that by wearing a hijab. Mm. And the other way would be true, that someone wearing a hijab, but the rest of the practice may not necessarily be. Because all of us are not perfect human beings, and we have our faults in the practice of Islam, and the degrees to which all of us practice varies. But the difficulty arises is when either Muslims make judgment on other Muslims, and non-Muslims make judgment on Muslims. And I think separating this, our culture and our Islam, is very, very important for us as a Muslim community.
So, Shalina, what are Muslim women doing to combat these this double jeopardy that they find themselves in, combating ethnic attitudes that are not grounded in Islam, and also combating negative attitudes towards Muslims that are grounded in ignorance about Muslims?
Well, on the positive side, there's a very lively, vibrant, dynamic group of young Muslim women who are trying to get their voices heard. So, for example, I've started writing using the internet as a tool. A lot of other women are doing the same. And they are trying to challenge traditional ideas of what it means to be a Muslim woman. But that doesn't mean it's easy, because groups of Muslims do feel under threat, rightly or wrongly, in the wider society we live in. And when a Muslim woman asks a difficult question, like, you know, why isn't a Muslim woman allowed in this particular mosque, for example, the traditional community can feel under threat. And we can understand why that is, because those traditions have lasted hundreds of years. And to find somebody asking that question can be a little bit difficult. But the first step is to ask those questions, to understand that in order to be a good Muslim, you can ask questions and you can challenge things. That doesn't mean that you want to be disruptive, but you just want everyone to reach a better understanding of what that faith is. But along with that really positive development, there are a lot of challenges in the sense that traditional Muslim communities do find it difficult to allow women to speak. And I think this is, it's good that we're very honest about that, because that's the first step to addressing the problem. But they also have to deal with all the parameters that the Muslim communities have to deal with, things like housing, education, employment. And Muslim women are sadly at the bottom of that pile in terms of progressing through into being participative members of community. On the positive side, we find that Muslim women are now outperforming Muslim men at school. So we need the men to kind of up their game a little bit. So there are positive things happening in education there, but overall,
I think you see women outperforming men in school, period, even among Christians.
Go women.
Yeah.
But
go men.
Yeah, go all Muslims, actually, is what we want to get to.
But no, go men. Suffering even in Christianity.
So what we need as a society to do is to make sure that that participation goes all the way through all the different strata of society that we have, whether that's education, employment, whether that's being at home and being a mother, whether it's participating in politics. So we have some way to go, but at least we're starting to identify the problems.
So are we seeing then, we're talking about ethnic groupings among the Muslims, you know, and the restrictions or the problems that they face simply because of their a particular practice of Islam that they imported into the West, right? That did not find any ground there, is a source of a lot of problems. From this, I'm getting that we are moving towards discovering a genuine Islam, removing the ethnicities, the ethnic negativities out of it, and discovering a genuine Islam. I'm thinking about a genuine Islam and also a Western Islam, you know, because Islam must be grounded in the environment it finds itself, you know. Are we seeing the emergence of a Western Islam with respect to women in the West? Could we see differences between practicing Muslim women in the West and practicing Muslim women in, for example, places like Pakistan and Africa and so on, Dr. Mawad Ali?
I think that is that is the hub of the issue for Muslims in the West. I think if you look at Muslims who have spread Islam historically through different countries and different cultures, the Islam has become embedded when Islam integrates with the local culture and becomes comfortable for those people. The challenge for the Muslims in the West is to, especially the second, third generations Muslims who are coming up, is to understand, to take out our ethnic Islam, or ethnic Islam in inverted commas, separate it out and create an Islam in the West which holds true to the core Islamic values and takes on other aspects of things in the West which are not contradictory to Islam. When we do that, we will ground Islam in Western society, and we will then get hordes of non-Muslims in the West to take on Islam, because they will feel identified with it. They will feel comfortable with it. They will think that when they practice Islam, they're not being a Pakistani, or they're not being a Bangladeshi, or they're not being an African, they're being true British Muslims. Mm-hmm. And I think the work that, for example, Shalina does in her blogs is that she wants to write about a British Islam from a woman's perspective, from a British woman's perspective. I think that's the way forward for Muslims in the West.
So do we have any examples of this taking place now? For example, I know that in many English-speaking countries, you have mosques where the sermon on Friday is done in Arabic. You know, even in non-Arab-speaking congregations. I know many people, for example, who became Muslim when they went to the local mosque. They found themselves a bit uncomfortable because the language of discourse in that mosque was not English, for example. Are we seeing tangible change? Do we see mosques now where the language of the sermon on Friday is in English? Do we see mosques where, for example, they encourage the breakdown of ethnic ghettoization in terms of things like, for example, marriage, in terms of, for example, being prepared to have the imam of the mosque being not from that particular culture? Are we seeing this right now?
I think before we get to that question, actually, the beginning of your statement was about what is British Islam, or what do British Muslim cultures mean? And that is greater than the context of the mosque, mm-hmm. because globally we see the development of public spaces outside of work, perhaps the place of worship and one leisure space. So there's a development of public space. And in terms of British Muslim culture, there's some really interesting developments happening. So there is the introduction of English nasheed scenes, or some people would call it Islamic music, within the parameters of Islam. So there's a very lively scene in terms of developing things that take European heritage but also Islamic heritage. There are lots of new Muslim artists who take calligraphy and interpose that with European styles. You will see a huge explosion of fashion in terms of Islam. So these are all reinterpretations of all the parameters of cultural life that are starting to find their own expression by saying, well, we love this about Islam and we're very comfortable with this in terms of British culture. How do we create some kind of fusion? And I think one of the things that Muslims perhaps need to take from their own DNA and their own history is the idea that it's okay to go through this quite chaotic and exciting and challenging and sometimes distressing process.
I need the DNA part.
of creating a new culture. And I think one of the great examples that Muslims talk about and perhaps need to apply in their own lives is that of the Alhambra in the south of Spain. So Muslims are very proud of this fantastic piece of architecture that the Moors built in the south of Spain, and which thousands and thousands of Muslims and non-Muslims go to visit in the heart of Europe and say, look, this is what Muslims can produce. So we need to say, hold on, we're proud of that, so we need to transfer that pride into developing something new and get rid of that kind of distrust and pessimism we have about the cusp of this new creation that we're on, and really drive that forward, because that is, as you quoted back from me, part of our DNA and part of our heritage.
Can I give another example to the question that you asked? I think khutbas in English, they're happening. What I want to go is beyond that, and that as Muslim community we have to go beyond that. One of our DNA, if you like, call is that people think that just to be a Muslim is just going to the mosque, and that's their. To be a Muslim, you have to be a Muslim outside the mosque as well. Going to the mosque is important, and we should continue, and that helps us. But working as a Muslim and with Islamic values outside, and let me give you an example. In London, we have got an organization called London Citizens. They are a grassroots organization that have affiliations or mosques, churches, synagogues come together and pick up social justice issues that affect their community. And they work together to address those and develop their political power to make that change happen. So example is that the famous campaign is a living wage campaign. So what the issue was, that there are workers who are on a very low wage, who cannot survive on that wage, from a faith-based community, whether it's Christians or Muslims, that is of value to us to raise them and to raise their wages, because that helps them be more independent. So we work together on a living wage campaign. Now to me, that work, working with London Citizens with no Islamic label, is as much Islamic to me as going to the mosque and praying. That is my prayer in the community. When I deal with social justice issues, and when a non-Muslim sees me that I'm doing this, without saying, oh, I'm Islamic or Muslim, they'll say, hang on a minute, these are Muslims? Oh, that's great. This is what they, we should be doing.
Thank you very much. We'll be right back after this news break. Stay tuned. Welcome back. And we're talking with Dr. Akbar Muhammad Ali and Shalina Zahra Jan Muhammad on the issue of integration and ethnic problems relating to women in Islam in Western societies. Now, we find that in Western society tends to adhere to certain ideological points of view. For example, one of the most important being feminism in the West, mm-hmm. right? And feminism being interpreted to be the liberation of women from all forms of male domination. Okay? And they look at Muslim women mm-hmm. as being dominated by men, but Islam being a patriarchal religion, mm-hmm. That women are subjected to all forms of abuse by men and so forth and so on. How do you, as a woman, and women in general, who are trying to practice Islam, mm-hmm. deal with this?
Well, let's unpick what you said a little bit. Mm-hmm. Feminism was started in Western Europe to counteract the huge imbalance that there was in the status and the rights between men and women. And I think this is something that globally we can acknowledge, whether we're Muslim or not, that there is a historic issue between the status and rights of men and women. They interpreted it to be with regards to women need to have all the same rights that men have, and as you said, very in a caricatured way, to liberate themselves from men. And they've gone through a number of phases, and feminism, in a certain sense, even in Europe and the Americas, has started to become a bit of a dirty word, and we've gone into this kind of postmodern phase where women are trying to say that it was great we got these rights, there's a little bit more work to do, but actually maybe the kind of vehemence and, in a sense, the violence in terms of the ideas we had isn't really the right thing for us anymore. So that's where the Western feminist movement has got to. And sometimes it gets overlaid or a little bit complicated with a similar move within the Muslim and Islamic community, which also says that when we take some of our traditional cultures that we spoke about and we use that lens to interpret what Islam means, there's also a confusion about the rights of women and the rights of men. And we don't always get it absolutely right. And I think when we acknowledge that when we put Islam and all the variety of cultures and, you know, Muslim men, just as much as other men, are guilty of trying to have more power than perhaps they should, you know, it's a human condition, we find that there's an imbalance there as well. And what sometimes happens is that because the word feminist is applied as a label to that movement as well, Muslims go, oh my God, you know, we can't have that, feminism is Western. So we can connect on the level that says Islam is about giving rights to all people. And that's what the Prophet, peace be upon him, came for, to give rights to all people. And what we need to do within the Islamic community, the work I do, is to say that Islam has a really strong sense of what those rights should be for men and women. And if we can just peel back the layers of culture, if we can peel back the idea that some Muslims have or non-Muslims have that perhaps Western culture is better, the only solution to finding better rights for women, then actually I think we're in such an exciting position to say, let's go back to understand what the role of women was in the time of Prophet and how do we apply that today. And so let's throw out the labels of feminism. Let's throw out all these strong emotions we have and just go back and say, how do we create that society of balance between men and women?
Mm-hmm. If I can add to that, is again what we were talking about earlier, is the issue that we confuse from our culture, our ethnic culture, about women and that practice, and we label it as Islamic. Mm-hmm. If we separate that out, the treatment of women in our own cultures, and identify what is the relationship between men and women and what is the role of women from an Islamic perspective, not our cultural perspective, I think we'll be creative. And we have to find creative ways of doing that. And again, that's a challenge for the Muslims in the West to be able to do that, because we are getting an opportunity to have a creative process, because we are in new lands in significant numbers now, mm-hmm. as Muslim minorities.
So you're talking about peeling back layers of culture, and you're talking about separating the ethnic practice from the Islamic practice. Are we getting into the same kind of, and I don't mean it negatively, but the same kind of historical role that the feminists found themselves in the West in terms of the role as reformist, Islamic reformist, correcting abuses or misunderstandings in Islam?
Gosh, a lot of big words you put there. Reformist, changing.
Correcting the situation. When you, for example, forced arranged marriages.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know that in Islam, a forced arranged marriage is not part of Islam. Mm-hmm. But a person might be from a community. Mm-hmm. Their parents, their grandparents lived with this type of cultural practice.
Mm-hmm.
So now here comes a Muslim woman, or man, mm-hmm. brought up and reared in a Western society.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to practice their proper Islam and find a problem with this aspect of forced marriages. So this is a kind of a reformist type of activity taking place. Would we call this a kind of Islamic feminism? Some people are calling it that.
I think... Let's use a parable and then go back to your question. We're told that when you read the verses from the Quran, every time you go back to read the verse, there'll be something new that's revealed to you, that you can go back and read it 1,000 times, and every time it'll be something different. And I think if we approach the basic texts of Islam and the teachings we have, and we look at them in the light of the Islamic values we know are part of the universal system, you know, freedom, equality, justice, the right for every human being to approach their creator, then we'll see some new things in that. And so that is the approach we need to take to looking at our faith anew. I think you've taken the idea of an Islamic reformation and applied that to a cultural practice. And so you're actually kind of confusing two separate issues. So we need to separate those and say, let's look at what the Islamic teaching is, and let's look at what the culture is, and then try and just break that link.
Mm. Yeah, I'm talking about reforming the culture, not Islam. You know what I'm saying? Like, we see...
Well, you got to be really careful when you talk about the two.
Yes. You know, we see, for example, our communities
mm-hmm.
Not necessarily practicing Islam the way it should be practiced. They practice what their grandfathers practiced.
Yes.
Now, we are in the West. We see this. And we want to change that. This is what I meant by reformation.
Can I say, I think the use of language is important.
Mm.
See, as a Muslim, as I grow, and if I'm refining myself to be a better Muslim, I don't mind call myself that process of reformation.
Mm.
So if as Muslims, instead of using labels of feminism or whatever, we say that we are, as Muslims, our value is for social justice. And if Muslims, women in our society are not treated in a just manner, and making sure that women are treated justly, say that we are struggling for justice.
Right.
Why do you want to label it as feminism?
Right.
Because with feminism, you get various stereotypes coming
right.
in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we should not fall into that trap, mm-hmm. where others may want to us to slip into that trap, and we should not do that. We should say the issues that are here, the crunch, is social justice for women.
Right.
And we have to accept. And, you know, there's nothing wrong in accepting that we have got ills in our society. And some societies and some cultures, the women are treated unjustly. And we should strive, from an Islamic perspective, to go towards that social justice issue.
I think we can take that idea one step further, actually. So, you know, we spoke about if you oppress women, that's an injustice. That's on a universal scale, anyone's ideas, that's injustice, and we need to make sure that disappears. But one of the things we don't realize as a community, we don't think about, is that If you have an oppression in one space, it will create an imbalance somewhere else. And in the case of women, if there are issues about their participation and their rights, actually that affects men as well. And when we look at the question of women's rights, we have to look at the question of how men and women interact and what is their integrated role. And there's a verse of the Quran which encapsulates it beautifully. And for some reason, people only think about it in weddings. And this is the verse that says, you know, from among our signs is that we created spouses for you, I'm paraphrasing the words, men and women, so that you can find tranquility. But actually, we should take that verse and look at it for society as a whole. And only when men and women are both equally free and have the rights that are due to them can we find that society works well. And so we need to get away from this idea that oppressing women is only bad for women. Yes, it is bad for women, but actually it's bad for men as well, because that means they're not getting...
Bad for the whole society.
Yeah, you've got, you know, very simple, you've got 50% of the society not participating. But it means that women are not productive, they're not creative, they're not fulfilling their potential, and that is detrimental to men as well. And so, you know, it's absolutely right not to use labels, because what we're trying to do is use a different model to the traditional one. Mm-hmm. We need to work on the women's rights bit a little bit first, because the imbalance is so great, but our view is that it's a holistic picture, and that's what Islam is. It's about a holistic view of making sure that justice and rights are well distributed and people are getting their due.
Now, when Muslim men and women find themselves in Western society and they start talking about things like justice and, equality for men and women and so forth and so on, we are surrounded by an ideological superstructure that defines these terms. For example, we live in a society that defines justice for women as being... Or justice being equality, and equality being sameness. You know, anything a man can do, or anything a man has the privilege of doing, a woman should also be able to do that. You know, and if I am sure, if tomorrow they find a way by which they can get a man pregnant, I'm sure there's a whole lot of feminist men are going to be lining up to get that shot or that transplant to become pregnant, you know. How do we differentiate? What is the Islamic idea of justice for women, right? And the Islamic, the non-Muslim idea, the secular idea for justice. What are the differences between them? When we talk about justice for women, what do we mean?
I think, can I say that when you talk about the terms, you see, as Muslims, and this is again the challenge for the Muslims in the West, is that we should not be in a cage of the language that surrounds us. That's where we can be creative and redefine the words. And we can, with our Islamic perspective and our Islamic values. Why do we want to be trapped with the language that is around us? And that is the positive contribution that Muslims can make in Western society by contributing to those debates on feminism, equality, justice, by bringing a fresh perspective which comes from their Islamic values. So I would say that, you know, we should not get trapped in that language and, you know, be defensive, because that's what, when we try and be defensive, we are not being proactive, right, and coming up with the true Islam.
Right.
And it doesn't show us being portraying ourselves in a self-confident culture and society and a group of people with a particular faith.
Now, you have some people who are defensive, it's true, right? Mm-hmm. There are also some people who try to redefine Islam, mm-hmm, in terms of Western criteria. For example, last three, 4 years ago, there was this whole big issue about women, a woman leading the prayer, mm-hmm, the Friday, yeah, prayer in America or some.
That's right. Amina Wadud, yes.
You see, and... you have right now, people trying to redefine the Islamic position on homosexuality, mm-hmm, and so forth. How do you grapple with that? I mean, what's your idea of equality with respect to women in Islam? And how different is it from, let's say, equality as propagated in the West with respect to women?
Well, Muslims have come into lands which are historically not Muslim majorities, and suddenly we're kind of looking around a little bit bewildered, like children in bright lights, and we're looking at it in the context of and let's be frank about this, economic wealth in the countries we've come to, a certain level of security and stability, which perhaps the countries that many Muslims came from didn't have. And so it's only natural to look at that and say, well, if the standard of living is better, perhaps their ideas are better, or perhaps we should buy into the ideas they have. And so what we need to do is explore a little bit about where we didn't quite get it right, and what good there is in the societies we live in. Because as I opened our discussion with, every society has some good, but has weaknesses as well. And as Muslims, our role is to try and find the best path. I mean, that's what we are, we're the people of the middle path. And so we need to not engage in this kind of comparison, because it's not them and us anymore. It's not Darul Islam and Darul Harb. It's about what is the right answer. You know, if we have tradition saying one thing and modernity saying another, we need to sit there and we need to use our brains, which is something we've forgotten how to do a little bit, have some confidence and say, hold on, where is the truth in this? Where is the haq? Where is the right answer in all of that?
To what extent is integration and the problems associated with integration based upon a Western ideology or worldview?
I mean, I want to make a point there that one of the key things which we as Muslims, or even non-Muslims who have immigrated to the West, do not understand is that the reason that we have come to the West is an economic need for the West. If that need was not there in the West, we would not be in the West. And we sometimes perceive ourselves by being apologetic that, you know, the West is perhaps doing us a great favor by allowing us to be in the West. I think that it would raise our self-confidence if we understand that we are making a positive economic contribution to the economy in the West, and this is why we are there. And it is an opportunity for us, since we are there based on the need for the West to be there, then what is our role as Muslims and with the Islamic values to contribute to that society in a positive manner? So rather than having a negative perception about ourselves, and I don't think it's ideological here, I think it's a pragmatic economic need that is happening. That debate does not take place in the media, and it's important to bring that out to Muslims to understand that that's the reason why we are in the West.
Only economic?
Not only. That's the key driver to how we have ended up. And that is the key driver to immigration. I mean, I can talk about Europe, that Europe's labor economic needs can only be met by the Muslims. Or one of the ways it can be met is by the Muslims, because Europe is surrounded by Muslim countries. Muslims have a population, a labor market that they can contribute, just like, you know, you can contribute with capital, whatever. You know, labor is an important commodity and a resource that we can contribute with. So once we have that resource, we say, what is the opportunity there for us?
Right.
And I think that we should see our role in the West as a much more long-term, because this is a long-term need, and part and parcel of us being there is to work together to become part of that society.
I want to thank you. You ended right on point, because we're just out of time. I want to thank Dr. Akbar Muhammad Ali and Sister Shalina Zahra Jan Muhammad for joining us here on Minbar. The topic, Muslim integration, or the integration of Muslim women and ethnic groups in Western society. And I think one very important point, I think, that came out of all of this is the dynamism of this new Muslim generation, a generation that has, as we call in America, attitude, being proud of their Islamic heritage, and also being aware that they're in a new environment that calls for new interpretations and a more dynamic and more genuine type of practice true to the Islamic word. I want to thank you once again for joining us on Minbar. I hope that you all will join us again whenever you are in town. And for those of you who are looking, please don't forget, if you have any questions, comments, or criticisms, write us at minbar@presstv.ir. That's minbar@presstv.ir. And until next week, looking forward to seeing you on this channel at this time. See you then.